Hey everyone, welcome to a special Parents Night In.
Hey!
I'm Justin.
I'm Kelly.
Tonight we're going to actually review a current film. Parents Night In, boozy, newsy, movie reviewsies. We watched the new Wonder Woman 1984, or as it's known colloquially, WW84. What did you think of Wonder Woman 1984?
I have some mixed feelings that I haven't quite reconciled yet. There were some great parts about it, and there are some things I really like, and I love Gal Gadot, so she's amazing, and I could watch her all day. So no complaints there. I thought Kristen Wiig was great, but I had some problems with some of the schmaltziness of it, and I had a lot of problems with the CG. And I'm not a CG picker-aparter, as a rule.
Ironically, I usually am.
I know.
That
I know this about you.
I didn't mind the CG being kind of cheesy in this.
I just thought it was so cheesy. Like, it pulled me out. It distracted me.
Overall, I liked it. I don't want to say more than I thought I would. I probably liked it about as much as I thought I would based on the fact that I enjoyed the first one and the fact that I don't expect much from these DCEU movies because most of them are terrible.
Mm.
So I didn't go into this being super nitpicky, but I liked enough about this that it carried me through the stuff that wasn't so good. And even the stuff that wasn't so good, like the CG and the schmaltziness, I felt like they came across to me as conscious choices because of the time period that the movie takes place. And it almost felt, in a lot of ways, like a superhero movie from 1984.
Yeah, I see that a little bit. I think I see. There was a point later in the movie where a couple of people fall off of a wall into some water. And it felt very soundstagey, early action movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't bothered by it. I actually, at that point, I was like, that was an interesting choice. But it did. It took me out of the movie where I was thinking about the choices and not sucked into the story enough.
Let's get into the story. Well,
okay.
Spoiler warning. We're going to talk in depth about things.
Oh, yeah.
This
so if you haven't watched it yet.
Most definitely not a spoiler-free review.
Yes. So here's the deal. I went into this. I'd seen enough people complain about it. So I went into it like ready to defend it. And because of that, I think I found myself like, can't defend that, can't defend that. And I think that's where my bias is a little bit off. I loved the first one. I didn't have any complaints about the first one.
I did have some complaints about the first one. I liked the first one.
I have to watch it again.
Very well, but the third act of the first one was like annoying to me because it was so Zack Snyder-y.
If you asked me to tell you about it, I wouldn't be able to. I don't remember it. It's been that long. I just remember walking away, not nitpicking it.
So the first one like was a really good origin story for her. And like she lit up the screen in a way that she didn't in Batman versus Superman because she wasn't given the chance to in that movie. Because everything about that movie had to be dour and...
Which came first?
Depressing. Batman versus Superman.
So that's the first time we see her?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which in itself is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, give her her own movie.
Give her her
first.
Origin, yeah.
But her as an origin story with a director who actually understood how to make this character likable, she was great in that role, and like you couldn't take your eyes off her when she was on screen.
Same here. I cannot take my eyes off her when she's on screen.
She was the type
she's
of
flawlessly
hero.
Gorgeous,
yes.
And so likable.
Yep.
Like anyone who watches these movies and says she's not likable, I don't believe
that's
them.
Insanity.
They're looking for a reason not to.
She was the type of virtuous hero that Superman should have been in these movies. The first Wonder Woman gave us that, it like fulfilled that need for me anyway, where it was like, I want a old school type pure good guy hero at the center of it. And that was what she was in both of these movies. And like that alone made them a recommendation for me and, you know, for other reasons too. But that like, that's a really good baseline. So the first movie was just like her fish out of water thing. She was sort of thrust into the world of World War I and had to figure out how to fit in. And then there was a big Ares God of War twist that happened. And it turned out one of the guys she was working with was Ares the God of War. And I found that part...
Who was it played by again?
David Thewlis. I found that part stupid. And like the third act was just this big CG bonanza of him shooting fucking red rays out of his face or whatever. And it looked like the Zack Snyder movies. And I was like, all right, you sort of lost me here, but I still like the movie okay.
Yeah.
So I don't remember nitpicking. That was my big complaint about the first movie. It was just that shit.
But I don't think I went into the movie seeing so much hate for it. And I'm trying to remember the timeline of like, was I in some of these movie groups at that point in time? Maybe not.
You probably weren't. And
was this before the SJW crisis or after?
It was around when it started.
Because the SJW bros piss me off no end.
They're idiots.
The focus throughout this movie on supporting women and fighting for women, I love. I love the whole, what are these, Amazons? The Amazonian women?
Yeah.
They're amazing. I like that they're a, you know, civilization full of women, and that's very cool. I also like Gal and Kristen Wiig's relationship is not focused on men.
No, not at all.
Like, there's men stuff in there.
Yeah.
But most of their conversations are not about men.
No, they don't really talk
about
that.
And so I thought that part was really cool, too, as a woman who looks for that kind of thing. I was happy to see that, like, yes, there were love stories in this movie. And we'll get into some of those themes. But they didn't overpower it. And it wasn't the only relationships that they looked at.
Right.
My big gripe with this movie was the over heavy focus on the truth will set you free. The truth, the truth, the truth, the truth, the truth. Great message.
Yeah.
Little heavy handed.
It was ham fisted.
What was the word that they used? I relinquished my wish.
I renounce my wish
got wicked cheesy. Like if it was that simple the whole time to be like, I renounce my wish. Oh, finger snap, it's gone. She said, I renounce my wish, and all of her cuts healed and she was fine.
Yeah.
And that seemed a little bit too easy for me.
I mean,
that bothered me a lot. And then when he did it, he was just like, oh, he spent the whole movie being crazy, like a fucking crazy person.
Yeah.
And then finally snaps and goes, I renounce my wish. Like, there was no gravitas in that moment for me.
It was a pretty cheesy MacGuffin anyway, the stone that grants wishes.
Yeah.
Like I said, it felt like an 80s superhero movie in that way.
I mean, the themes were not lost on me about there's never enough power and more is always better and more is more.
Yeah, I mean, it was steeped in the whole Reagan era obsession with greed and material wealth and instant gratification. Like, it fit the time of the 80s, which is why they chose that particular time period to do it, I'm sure. And these are themes that still resonate now.
Yeah.
In 2020. So, like, I appreciated all of that. And the main villain, Max Lord, played by Pedro Pascal of Mandalorian fame. I thought his performance was really good.
Yeah, he was great. I thought he was great.
Again, in like a sort of cheesy Superman villain kind of way. He was very much Lex Luthor-y and the guy from Superman 3 as well.
Yep.
But, I mean, no points for drawing the parallels between him and Trump. A failing businessman / TV personality who cons people into giving him money.
Mm.
I mean, it's like that stuff was
on the news.
Again, I appreciated it, but it was very ham-fisted.
Yeah.
So, like, I liked all of those elements for what they were, in spite of the fact that they were done in such a kind of cartoonish way.
If I take this as what you're describing it as, and it's like, hey, folks, this is a romp to remind us of what superhero movies were like in the 80s.
That's what it felt like to
then,
me.
Yeah. Then most of my nitpicks kind of go away because it's like that's what they were evocative of.
I think that's why I'm more forgiving of it than a lot of people, because it felt like all that stuff was done on purpose to make it feel like a movie of that period.
Well, and you like lived and breathed that in the 80s. Like, and that was your world.
Back then, we didn't get movies.
Not movies, but Wonder Woman TV and Hulk on TV you know, the Superman movies. Like, we lived and breathed that in the 80s.
And in a time where so many superhero movies are, I mean, at worst, dour like Batman versus Superman, and at their lightest, still pretty fucking intense, like, say, Captain America, Winter Soldier. This felt like sort of a more lighthearted, escapist piece of fluff.
So here's my thing.
That actually did have some nice themes in it.
Now, I am not a DCEU.
They're calling it DCEU.
Y-E? Expanded?
Extended.
Okay. Universe. I am not a DCEU movie watcher. I will admit that the only one that I have seen is the very, very first Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Superman.
Which was awful.
Yeah, and it's so like depressed and made me miserable because I grew up on the 80s Superman movies. I think we talk about this when we do Superman. You know, I just got turned off from that point and I was like, no, there's really no point in me watching any more of these.
And you're really not missing anything other than the Wonder Woman films.
Correct.
Because Batman versus Superman is the
same
way.
Oh, I lied. And the first Wonder Woman.
Right, right.
So this is the third of the DCEU movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
But Justin has seen them all.
I haven't seen them all.
Justin has seen more of them than me. And he has a very famous hate for Batman versus Superman. And I've heard so much about the whole Martha, why did you say that name thing? And I got to tell you that when, what's his name first shows up and says to her, do you have the time, or something about the time? There's not enough time. I don't have all the time. She turned around and said, why'd you say that to me? And I was like, really?
Did the, when Steve, like, yeah, reincarnated Steve, shows up?
But he said something like, you know, I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she turned, like, it stops her in her tracks. Why did you say that to me? And it felt very much like that moment where it was like, that was her response. Like, I don't know. I just, that was weird to me. But then I kind of let that go. I loved Steve, actually, in this movie a lot. I thought he did a great job.
In the first one, too.
Yeah, Chris Pine was great in this. I love him as the fish out of water.
Yep.
Like, he was, it was fun to see him
that
living
was a nice
in the 80s.
Role reversal, because in the first one, she's the fish out of water. Yeah. He's kind of trying to acclimate her to that. And then in this one, they flip roles.
But he's such a great, wide eyed innocent.
Yes.
Like, he did a great job in that. So it was really fun when he was on screen, and I loved everything that they did with him. Even the silly, like, trying on clothes thing was cheesy, but it was cute. I thought he did it really well.
They have really good chemistry together.
They have great chemistry. And I'll say it 100 times throughout this discussion. She's just so effortlessly gorgeous and, like, so natural.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I want to be her on screen in my real life. Like, how does she do it? There's a confidence and a comfort and a strength.
But
that
not,
she brings to every
but like in a very innocent
scene.
Kind of way.
Yeah.
She, when she walks into a room, she commands the room, but not in like, look at me, everybody.
Yeah, she's definitely not
it's
that.
It's just like, I don't know how I do this. Just, I just do this, I'm sorry.
Who's the look at me, everybody? Like, if you had to compare it to a look at me, here I am. I've just entered the screen, everyone.
I don't know. I don't know if I can pick someone like that. I mean, I don't want to say this because I really like her, but Anne Hathaway, you could kind of describe that way.
Well, that's why a lot of people hate Anne Hathaway.
I know, because she's so...
She's got that High School Musical thing
theatrical,
going.
But yeah. I really like Anne Hathaway.
Right. I guess, and that's true. She killed it as Catwoman, but she was like, I'm here, everyone, and I look fucking awesome, and you're going to stare at me.
She's
And Gal just walks on, and she's like, here I am. Don't mind, you know, almost like, don't mind me. And it's like, no, I have to mind you.
Right.
Because you're making me mind you.
Right. So what was your nitpick about the love story aspect?
I really actually appreciated heavily the theme behind her being like, for once, just for once, I want something for me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to find every angle I can to fight this. But I felt like it was too high level. Like, she said it, but then she didn't really look for an answer. She just kind of avoided.
Well, there wasn't really an answer.
I know. And then when he, and I loved that he sacrificed himself for it. I can't even actually put words around it now, but when they were in their last moments together, I just remember thinking, like, I want this to be something different, but I don't know what. And then by the time it resolved, I think I was over it. Because I sort of loved how, like, she kissed him and just walked away and never looked back.
Yeah.
That was kind of awesome, actually. It was pretty badass. It just was like another thumbs up in the Gal Gadot book.
Right. I mean, it was not unlike the thing in Superman 2, where it's on his shoulders to save the entire world, but, like, I need to be loved, too.
Right.
So I'm
like,
going to try
I'll do
thing,
everything for everybody.
But I just need this one thing.
Yeah.
And then he, but you know, the difference
why
is
can't I have it?
In that he gives all of it up to be with Lois.
Well, and this is very similar. She basically gives it all up to be with him.
She
not
does,
knowingly.
Not knowingly, exactly.
But when she starts to realize it, she's,
at
then it's
she,
like, do I want to let this go? I think maybe I do.
Right. But then ultimately she chooses the right path.
And mostly because she sees the millions of people around her that are suffering
for it. The world needs me.
And she takes the leadership to be like, all right, I'll renounce mine.
Right.
If, you know, if I know that I can get people to follow me.
There were also some interesting parallels, I thought, with Batman Returns, the one with Michelle Pfeiffer and Danny DeVito. There's the mousy...
I've never watched that whole movie.
It's pretty bad. but there's the mousy woman who is like super shy, can't talk to anyone, who eventually becomes this like sexy cat themed supervillain.
Yeah.
And then there's the industrialist who spends the entire movie just accumulating power and ends up being kind of the main villain.
Yeah.
Which is what Christopher Walken's character does in Batman.
So you're basically saying that Kristen Wiig is like the Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer, yeah.
She was great.
I liked her.
In this.
Yeah, she was. When I first heard she was cast, I was like, that seems weird. She's going to be a comic book villain? That's strange. But I know why they cast her, because she has the range to pull off the super awkward, nerdy type, which is what she specializes in,
right,
in most of her movies, and SNL. And then morphs into this like sexy, ass-kicking villain.
Right. Which, you know, you don't see her in a lot of sexy roles.
You don't.
But she has the range to pull it off, and I thought she did that pretty well here. She looked kick-ass, and all of the scenes that she needed to look kick-ass, she looked so good.
Yes, she did.
Makeup and costuming was fantastic for her.
Yep, and hairstyling.
Yeah, like the whole thing worked really, really well.
Yeah. Apparently someone reviewed this movie and said because of her need to be hot, it set back the female superhero genre decades. I was like...
Whose need to be hot? Kristen Wiig's?
Yeah. It's like, number one...
Disagree.
She's the villain, or one of them, ultimately. Right. Number two, in the end, she realizes that she was wrong to want this stuff at the expense of everything else. And number three, they show her beating the shit out of this guy who tries to rape her. So, like, clearly it's not all about her being hot. Like,
right. And she didn't
Her final wish is like, I don't want to be like anyone. I just want to be a super predator.
Right.
But, which is when she turns into Cat Lady.
And you've seen that trope play out before where like the nerdy girl gets hot, but then uses her hotness to trap the guy.
To get the guy. She doesn't care about getting the guy.
No. But I'm saying she uses her hotness to trap the guy that wronged her and then beat him up. But didn't use her hotness to do that. She just used her strength.
Right.
So as soon as he started picking on her again, she turned around and was like, you want to say that again to me?
Right. That's such a ridiculous complaint.
Yeah, I disagree with it. I liked the friendship angle with them at the beginning.
Yeah.
I thought it was great that, like, Diana kind of pushed her away at first and then realized, like, you know what? I kind of need a friend.
Yeah.
And then what Diana found in her, I thought was a great girl moment as well. Like, a great Bechdel test-worthy thing where she was like, I think you're amazing. You're, like, so open and honest and you.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, this gorgeous, ridiculous Amazonian warrior who's like, this nerdy chick is awesome.
Right, because she doesn't feel the need to be guarded.
She doesn't feel the need to be guarded, but she also, it just adds to that, it puts more check marks in that column of like, she doesn't need to compare herself to this person, be better than this person. She just is a genuinely open and relaxing and good person to be around. So she's just like, here's the things that are awesome about you.
Right.
And when she says to her, here's what you've lost, she loses her, that warmth and her caring for other people.
Yeah, I thought they could have sort of illustrated that a little bit more.
The what she lost?
Yes. Like, I get what they're going for. She becomes a self-absorbed asshole.
Yeah.
Everyone gives up something really important.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was the most important thing. And there was a part of me that thought about that.
And the most important thing to her was just, she's nice.
Yeah.
Like, they could have done a better job.
Or it's taken away some of her intelligence or something. But yeah, so that was interesting, right? Like, everyone else gave up something pretty fucking substantial.
Right.
And like, she gave up her niceness.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
That's not as big a sacrifice. And her sweetness, but like...
But like, who cares about the innocence, really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, yeah, that was interesting to me. I mean, the only way I felt like they did a truly good job of illustrating it was when she beat up the guy that hit on her. And then her homeless friend, who she like feeds, was like, what is wrong with you? And she like brushes him off and is kind of rude to him. And that was like the moment where you're like, oh, that's what she lost.
Her giving up her niceness isn't that big a sacrifice compared to everybody else's.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it makes sense because she didn't want to give it back.
That was her biggest gift?
It was her biggest gift, but, like, no one wanted it. Mm. So, like...
So nobody else really
It doesn't matter that she's a nice person. No one is interested in having a friendship with her, except Diana.
Right.
So they could have done a better job of making it clear why, in the end, she'd realize, okay, I should just go back to being the way I was.
I think they just... didn't even bother going there.
No, they didn't. That's what I'm saying. That's a nitpick for me.
Let's get into the nitpick about his relationship with his son. And then the kid wishes for his dad to come home. But that wish basically, like his wish somehow goes unheard. And then when he renounces his wish, I'm trying to remember what the catalyst was for him to renounce it. I know it was her. But then after he renounces it and he goes home to his son says, oh, I wish for you to come home. I'm so glad you came home. And he was like, I didn't come home because you wished for it.
Well, yeah.
Came home because of something else.
No, he says, I didn't come home because you wished for it. I came home because I genuinely wanted to be with you again. Because I love you. Because you're my son. Like, he was trying to say...
You don't have to wish for my love.
You don't have to wish for it. I came home because I wanted to. It was an unselfish... not unselfish, but like...
But I feel like when the son wished for him to come home, that should have snapped it. Like that, like I was like, oh, this will be really interesting because the son's wish is what's going to stop this whole fucking chaos.
Well, the son already wished earlier, though, when they had that scene together and the son wished for him to be great. Because he said, my greatness is your greatness.
Okay, thank you. So that helped me with my...
Son didn't get another wish.
Little bit of a struggle with the nitpick. But why did Kristen Wiig get another wish?
That I don't know. My theory is that because the first wish was with the actual stone, the second wish was with him. Although she wasn't even touching him at the time she wished to become an apex predator. So that part was weird.
But neither necessarily were the people when he was touching them through
particles. Well, but the idea was... because the satellite thing was described as touching every network, that therefore it worked.
That was a weird plot hole, too.
I wouldn't call it a plot hole.
Technology touching.
A contrivance.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was kind of a goofy...
because even the character was like, I wouldn't describe it like that. And he was like, it's good enough for me. Get me the satellite.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. Let's have a real conversation about technology and science.
It was a silly MacGuffin. I don't want to criticize it too heavily because I liked the themes that it brought to the table.
Yeah.
Like, there were a couple of genuine sort of choke-up moments for me, people choosing to be good people and selfless and not be total assholes and realize that if everybody just gets what they want all the time, the world goes to shit.
I thought that was
a strong theme.
Yeah, I agree.
So because it was bringing stuff like that forward, it was easier for me to forgive some of the nitpicks I had about it. Mm. And like as far as the CG...
ugh. The opening scene of the movie, I was like... They couldn't do better than this?
In the mall?
That was okay. It was the Amazonian.
The Amazonian race?
The warriors.
I thought I could have done without the entire Amazonian race scene.
It set up the whole thing about the truth.
About truth. But like, that's it. That's all. And the only way it pays off is at the end where she talks about how the truth is all that we need. That's the only thing that matters is the truth. You didn't need an entire 15-minute...
it was a long sequence.
...sequence to set that up.
Well, we'd also kind of... once again, underline this thing of, like, she's certainly some kind of phenom because she's, what, like, nine? And she's, you know, a warrior against all these women who are definitely in their late teens, early 20s. And she almost beats them all.
Yeah.
I mean, it was helpful in that, you know, she almost got to the end and someone physically, like, jumped in and stopped her and was like, took the short path.
Right.
But we didn't need to
illustrate further that she's a phenom. We already know that.
No, and I agree with that. And then I don't remember in the first movie, like, was it established in the first movie that she was a phenom her whole life?
I think so. Hmm. Well, I think her mom, like in the first movie, her mom sort of held her back because she was worried about her reach exceeding her grasp or whatever. And then the Robin Wright character pushed her in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. So she had these two conflicting
mother figures.
I mean, the only other message I can glean from that opening scene is you can't earn things the easy way. It's better if you actually work for it and earn it the right way, which plays out throughout the movie with the stone. Like,
it does.
Getting something because you wished for it isn't as good as earning it.
But there was this whole other thing about that scene where, as I was watching it play out, before I realized what the point of the scene was, when she first falls off her horse and she has to troubleshoot the situation and find a way to still get there.
Ingenuity.
I was like, this is a great way to set up how she can overcome any odds to
right.
solve the problem. And she, you know, she looked at this and said, how can I get past this? And she found a really creative way.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was actually weird of them to set that up.
To punish her for
it.
Yeah, I agree.
So there was that part of me that was like, yes, the path was supposed to be from A to B, but shit got screwed up in the middle. Mm. And so her path was not a straight line from A to B, but she still got to B.
Right.
Through creativity and ingenuity and rolling with the punches.
Yeah.
Why was that punished?
Right.
And so I don't think it's a straight analogy for the wish thing. Because the wish thing is a little bit more like, I'm going to take the easy way. She didn't take the easy way. She fell off her horse.
Yeah, I know.
And said, how can I get back to my horse?
I feel like that was the intent of that scene to try to connect it to the rest of the movie.
But I don't feel like they did that part well.
I agree, which is why I don't think that scene should have been in there at all. They should have just left it out, and the first scene should have been the scene at the mall.
And also the whole thing at the mall.
Which also set the tone for the movie, because that scene is super cheesy 80s.
It's super cheesy 80s, really superhero. Fun. I loved the mall. I want to go back.
It was like first Superman movie scene.
Yeah. But so, the other thing that threw me off about that mall scene is that the little girl that, like, is totally in awe of her and she saves her and, like, pushes her into a giant teddy bear. Mm-hmm. And then the girl watches her, like, kick ass in the mall. There are hundreds of other people in that mall. And she stands there and stares at the girl for at least 15 seconds and goes, shh, and then winks at her. And it was adorable in a girl power moment where it was like, don't tell anybody that it was me.
But there were tons of witnesses.
But there were shitloads of witnesses. So it's not like she picked up a girl off of an empty street, dropped her in her backyard and said, don't tell anybody about me. There was one girl out of thousands of people that she saved. Yeah. And for her to be like, shh, like all of these other people are going to tell on you, you crazy bitch.
Right.
That was weird for me.
That was weird.
It was sort of like, I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to be like, oh, this little girl's going to idolize her now. Okay. And?
Well, and it was like they were trying to have her be like a Spider-Man or a Batman where there's rumors of this person dressed up in this weird costume saving people, but nobody can confirm it because nobody can never see the person.
And it was partially
But that's not how she is. She's more like Superman where it's like, Wonder Woman came and saved me. I don't know who she really is, but she's real.
Right. I was honestly partially waiting for there to be a scene in the museum or something where the girl is in the museum and she's like, Mom, that's the lady from the mall.
Yeah.
You know, like that would have been very Superman of them to do too.
Yes. The movie was definitely too long. It was 2.5 hours. Did not need to be 2.5 hours.
A lot of the comments online were complaining about it started off slow when it got slower. I thought it had peaks and valleys.
Yeah, I definitely started off slow. Like the mall scene and the race are the only two action scenes for like the first hour, I feel like.
Mm.
And then there's all this like discovery and the stone and the effect that it's having on people. And
you don't see her in her suit again until they're in pursuit of
Egypt.
Lord. Yeah,
Egypt. Until they're in Egypt. And I think that's a good hour into the movie, which I was kind of surprised by. I didn't mind it.
But I'm okay with that because I think the other movies rely too heavily on the action.
Yeah, I mean, I like that the movie took its time to establish things, but I felt like it probably took too long to establish things.
And yeah.
Just things could have been tightened up to trim a good 15 minutes or so out of it. So I'm going to say I thought Max Lord was a much more interesting villain than Ares, God of War from the first movie.
Yeah. I thought he was great.
Which is often the case in second installments. Usually the first villain is like sort of a lower level thing because they're spending so much time on the origin story and all that. But a good villain goes a long way, especially in a movie like this.
It was particularly fun seeing him in that role, having just finished Mandalorian.
Yes.
And, you know, he's such a cool character in that and very different. It was just nice to see his range.
He's so slimy.
Yeah, he's slimy and like exuberant and over the top and creepy and
increasingly desperate as the film goes on.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's nice to see him sort of reduced to just accepting the fact that he's not going to be exceptional. And things are more important than that in life, like having a good relationship with his son.
Right.
So that was a nice way to resolve that character without having to kill him off, which is what so many of these movies do.
That is very true.
And the part where she kind of convinces him, where she has the lasso around his leg, and because the lasso not only makes you tell the truth, it can show you the truth. And he flashes back to how his whole life has been people abusing him, and then him trying to make something of himself and failing over and over again.
And there was a moment in that where
it gave him a reason
like
to be disillusioned enough to want to take the shortcut.
Yes, and I don't feel like I actually didn't get the impression that he jumped. I mean, he certainly didn't jump right to the shortcut. I think it was just years and years of trying that finally took their toll.
Right.
But I appreciated the whole like abusive dad situation, you know, that like he came from a broken experience that made him a broken person. I thought that the speech was a little cringeworthy.
Which speech? Hers speech?
Yeah. As I'm watching the speech, I'm like, oh, ooh, ooh. Like, there were some embarrassing, cringy moments. And I think it was
I didn't find it cringy.
I don't know. The whole, like, you can save the day. It's all you.
That
was a little bit much. I kind of want to, like, look up the transcript of what she says. She delivers it well.
It's definitely heavy-handed.
It was heavy-handed and almost, like, too on the nose for her character to do. It didn't feel effortless like the other things. It felt like she turned on this cheese factor that she didn't have to use anywhere else in her character.
It went on too long, I thought, the speech.
Yeah, and it was okay, we get it.
Yeah, and then eventually the guy is like, I'm not going to do any of that. And she's like, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to everybody else.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been whittled down and simplified and made a little bit more, I don't want to say ambiguous, but I guess less specific.
Mm.
It could have been more about how taking shortcuts isn't the way to get what you want.
Right.
And when everybody takes shortcuts, then everybody loses, that kind of thing. which is clearly what's happening all around the world. Everyone's losing because the whole civilization's falling apart.
Right. I thought there were too many, like, one-liners of, like, it's up to you now to save the day, and all you have to do is renounce your wish, and all of this goes away, and it was sort of like...
It was a little bit Saturday morning cartoonish, where at the end of the episode, there's, like, a lesson for the kids.
Yes.
I can see that parallel.
So I will, you know, I guess in the grand scheme of it, right, I didn't hate the movie. I liked a lot of different parts about it. My yeah. biggest problems with it were the CG, which is, like, still egregiously bad to me, and it's frustrating. I think maybe just that speech. Those are, like, my two bigger problems.
People are, like, trashing it relentlessly online, and I feel like that's way over the top. Like,
but I think
it's not a masterpiece by any means.
No, but it bothers me that people wait with bated breath just to trash it because a woman is starring in it.
Do you think that's a lot of it? Because I haven't seen that many comments about that aspect. I've just seen people saying, oh, it sucks.
I mean, I don't feel like this is getting different treatment than Captain Marvel in that sense.
Well, people like Gal Gadot more than they like Brie Larson. That was a big part of the reason people trashed Captain Marvel is because, oh, Brie Larson said she wants to see more women film critics, therefore she hates men. So that kind of bullshit.
That part's different. I'm not seeing the same kind of hate.
Yeah.
And I agree, the difference between, like, and everyone was like, oh, Brie Larson doesn't smile. Brie Larson's wooden. Yeah. Brie Larson blue. I guess I shouldn't say that. I guess I would say that, like, from what I see a lot is the whole Marvel versus DC thing come to play. And it's like everyone, you know, all so the Marvel got, all the Marvel bros want to trash DC and all the DC bros want to trash Marvel.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot
so
of
So I guess
that
there's more
the
of that happening.
The DC fans were, like, blindly drooling over BVS when it came out and saying it was, like, a great work of art. And I was yeah. like, no.
There's nothing art about it.
It wants to be a great work of art. You can tell that that's what Zack Snyder thought he was doing when he was making that, is making a great piece of art, but it's not. Mm. Whereas this isn't trying to be a great piece of art at all. It's just trying to be fun, escapist, popcorn entertainment. And to me, it succeeded on that level in the same sort of innocent way that Superman 2 succeeded on that level. I'm not saying it's as good a movie for 2020 as Superman 2 was in 1981. Like, when that came out, Superman 2 was like, holy shit, that was incredible. It doesn't age well.
Right.
But I got the same kind of feeling watching this as I got watching that.
So you've brought up Superman, and it reminds me of something else that I had a glaring problem with the movie that was CG related, but the running.
Oh.
She did some serious Superman running.
Yeah, where it's like she's on a crane.
Young Clark running.
And her legs aren't even touching the ground.
Yes. And yeah. So as we were watching the movie, I pointed it out during the movie. We didn't speak a lot during the movie, but I pointed that out because it just was, like, comical.
And it was a shame because I really liked the scene where that happened. That was right after she renounced her wish and got her powers back. And it was,
yeah, it was awesome.
Like, the music by Hans Zimmer, who was mm-hmm. awesome. Was really stirring.
Yes.
Especially in scenes
and,
like that.
And her face and her energy, and it yeah. was all awesome.
So it was really well done, except for the running.
And then they cut to this really bad crane running.
Yeah.
And so it reminded me of two things.
And again, I wonder if that was on purpose, because there's no reason you can't make that look good.
So that's what I was thinking. Like, after you said it, I'm like, maybe there was an homage to
Superman.
To young Clark
yeah.
running. And the reason I'm thinking that at this point is that, so then I said to Justin, you don't see that in the Marvel movies. And this isn't a no. DC versus Marvel thing. The Marvel stunts are done so well.
Yep.
When someone lands, it looks like they're landing hard. If someone jumps off a building, they don't land on the ground like Superman smoothly. Is coming down from a flight. They land.
Right.
When they run, they're actually running. Like, you, when you watch sort of behind the scenes footage, they are on treadmills
yeah.
with a green screen behind them. Actually running.
Well, like,
and so yes, they speed it up a little bit, but it's natural running.
For example, in The Winter Soldier, at the beginning, when Falcon is running around the whole, I don't know
what complex
that,
or whatever
the body
yeah.
of water is called, and Steve Rogers is like, on your left, and he's running super fast, but it looks 100% real.
Right.
Like, he's actually running 30 miles an hour.
Right.
And I'm not even sure how they achieve that effect. If they shoot him separately and just speed up the footage and then superimpose it over the Falcon running. But yeah, it's no comparison.
No comparison. So, and because I brought that up, Justin, you know, felt the hankering to watch Winter Soldier again, because it's like his favorite.
Well, it was also
favorite of the MCU.
It took place in Washington, D.C. and yes, made me think of that.
So as we were...
And Jesus Christ, that movie still holds up.
It's still so good.
It's fucking amazing.
So as we're watching that, I'm like, see, look how good that was. See, look how natural that was. But that's the point of why it was so frustrating for me in Wonder Woman in WW84. It just took me out of it.
Yeah.
And I don't, I feel like you lose the heaviness of the moment when the CG is too...
cheesy.
Yeah. So yeah. Even if it was a conscious choice, that's fine. I know you're trying to take the heavy out of it.
Maybe it was the wrong move but for that moment.
Need, yeah, you need heavy sometimes. You need the heavy to balance out the light.
Of course. And what the early DC EU movies didn't get is that you also need light to balance out the heavy.
I mean, true.
It was nothing but heavy.
True. This is almost like too much in the other direction. The pendulum swung too far.
Yeah.
When she pulls Kristen Wiig out of the water after she shock drowns her, when she flies out of the water with her.
Yeah.
When they land, it looks like she's like
a feather. La, la. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, she's super strong. Yes, that's great. But she's carrying a woman and she's landing from after a very tough fight.
Yeah.
And she lands like a ballerina who's just been lifted up by a very strong man. And so to me, like those moments are like, no, she should be a little bit exhausted and like almost heartbroken because she had to do this to her friend.
Right.
So that physically should be weighing on her too. And instead she landed like, I am so pretty and light. So those, I don't think I could ever stop nitpicking the CG in this movie. It just makes me so mad. And again, I normally don't care. Like Justin will pick on CG and stuff and I'm like, I don't even notice it. It's fine. We watched something recently that you had a problem with and I was like, I didn't even pick up on it.
What was it?
Because we have the huge TV now.
Was it Mando when Luke Skywalker shows up?
No.
Because that looked horrible.
It did. I
love The Mandalorian. I loved that episode, but that CG Luke face was embarrassingly terrible, like a video game from 15 years ago. Like, what the fuck are you doing? So, what would you give Wonder Woman 84 out of 4 stars?
We're using a 4-star scale. We're not doing balonies?
No balonies.
Okay.
Mostly because that's confusing.
And I don't know how to equate it to stars for the lay folk. I feel like giving it less than 3 stars would be wrong. But the whole star it's missing is all CG. Mm. I don't know. But 3 seems high, too. I'm in between a 2.5 and a 3.
That's exactly where I am, too.
Like, I don't want to give it a 2.5 because I feel like it had a lot to offer. But
it did.
It had a lot of drawbacks.
So, like, Roger Ebert's star scale, whenever he would rate something, basically his cutoff for recommendation versus non-recommendation was... 2.5 or lower is non-recommendation. 2.5 is usually like, I'm sort of on the fence. I want to recommend
it. See it. You make you choose for yourself.
But I can't really recommend it. But 3 and up is a recommendation. I feel like I would recommend it. Not as like, don't expect this to be anything amazing. Just
it's
expect
fun.
It to be a fun comic book movie that's a throwback to old comic book movies.
Or for me, it's like if you want to see a great women-led cast.
Yeah.
I do want to make one other analogy as we're talking about this. And maybe this will... play in the rating scale as well. If I think about the Marvel world, there's like Thor, the first one, and then there's Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And this was sort of the Ragnarok to the Wonder Woman series in that it's like, there are some heavy things that happen, but there's a lot of really fun moments and they play into the cheese a little bit that they did not do in the first two Thors.
Yeah, but Ragnarok is much more clever about that kind of shit. Than
it's clever. Was. Yeah, but I'm just saying like, if you think about Ragnarok when you compare it to the other Marvel movies, outside of Guardians, because Guardians has their own universal feel.
Right.
I feel like Ragnarok was the WW84 of that world.
Yeah, I mean, Ragnarok was like a almost reimagining of Thor because the first two were not considered very good.
They were pretty dark.
They were just dour.
Right. But like the whole Jeff Goldblum-y part.
Ragnarok made Thor fun.
Yeah, and it was bright and fun and goofy, and they had a lot of interesting things to look at, whereas the other movies did not. And I feel like that also made Thor more light.
Yeah. I would like to see the Marvel team tackle a Wonder Woman movie because I feel like they would make a really great one. Because, they're just better at this shit. Objectively speaking, the MCU team is better at making these movies than the DC team is. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny because, like, the first part of the movie, she's like, I don't have a man that I've never loved since Steve died. I'm not interested in anyone else. And I was like, the only man that's good enough for her is Steve Rogers. Get her and Captain America together. Then you'd see a fucking power couple.
Yeah.
God, they're both perfect. How could you even... you couldn't even be in the same room with them.
Disney should just buy the Wonder Woman property and make their own movie with Gal.
I feel like if you put the two of them in a room together for a prolonged period of time, all the light bulbs would explode.
The whole room would explode.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I feel like if I can't do quarter star ratings, as most critics don't, I would probably give it a hesitant 3 stars. Like, I don't want to say I wouldn't recommend it because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
3 stars maybe seems a little bit high, but I'll go with the 3 stars because... It's either that or 2.5, which 2.5 is by the classic Ebert scale, a non-recommendation.
I like 3 out of 5. I like 5-star scales.
If it were a 5-star scale, I would go 3 out of 5, I would say.
Because then 3 out of 5 is like, it's like a C, right? Like it's not the worst thing ever, but it's definitely not top of the class.
I'll give it a C+.
C++.
I mean, sadly, it's still one of the best DC extended universe movies so far. Mm-hmm. I mean, what the fuck are they doing over there? I enjoyed it with reservations. It's definitely got some flaws, but the things I liked about it outweighed the flaws.
I scrolled by a headline and I didn't click on it because I didn't want to be further influenced before we had our conversation. But it was somebody who compared Captain Marvel and this and decided that Captain Marvel was the better movie.
I agree with that.
So that was going to be my question is, what do you think? I think I agree with that as well. I'd have to see Captain Marvel again.
I need to watch it again.
Recently.
But I didn't have many really reservations about recommending that movie at all.
Yeah, I really liked it.
It wasn't like...
I did not get the hate for that.
No. Well, the hate about, as I said, was mostly based on the fact that people were pissed at Brie Larson over something stupid. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't like one of the greatest MCU movies, but it was a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
So that was very enjoyable. This was pretty enjoyable. That's how I'd rank those.
It's a very strong scale you've got there.
Uh-huh.
What's the other sides of that? There's pretty enjoyable, very enjoyable.
Holy fucking shit, that movie's awesome. Like Winter Soldier.
Okay, and then what's the bottom?
Bottom is, this is Man of Steel bad.
That's a good Likert scale. I'm gonna, when I do training classes from now on at work, I'll ask people, was this Man of Steel bad or was it super fucking awesome, recommendable?
Man of Steel made me want to jump into traffic.
Is that the one that I saw?
Christ.
Yeah. So my grandfather, we've talked about my grandfather and his love for Superman. I believe that's one of the last movies he ever saw in a theater. If I think back, like, I don't know how many more he went to after that.
I could see that ruining people for going to the theater.
So Jesus. He loved Superman so much. So one of my younger cousins took him to see it. And he was like,
what the fuck is this?
You know, in his super masterful accent, like, Jesus, that was such a loud movie. Why was it so loud? It was like all banging and shit.
Well, I saw, I watched when that came out, Red Letter Media did their review on it, and they were like, I feel sorry for old guys who grew up with Superman, and like, this is their superhero, and they go and see this, and it's just like death and just bludgeoning with CG violence for 2.5 hours.
And that's exactly how I feel about poor Grampy seeing that movie.
I mean, I feel bad for anyone who had to sit through that fucking movie, but especially the older generation who's like, this is not Superman.
I don't think I could hear
Superman
anything.
Superman is supposed to be fun.
There was so many explosions. I didn't even know what I was listening to.
God damn it. That movie pissed me off so much.
I mean, why is it so loud in there?
Thanks for joining us for this special review.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do more of these in the future.
It was fun talking to you.
Now that HBO is going to be showing every Warner Brothers new release over the next year.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll have more opportunities to do these quickly.
We saw something. We want you to hear about what we think. ASAP.
Because we know that you really want to hear what we think ASAP. Am I right, folks?
You've been waiting for this for days.
High five, everyone. I'm going to touch all of you at once, and then you can have your wish.
Oh, God.
Thanks for listening to Parents Night In. Please subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Google, Apple, Anchor, and more. And you can also check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/C/enuffa.com.